Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. My name is Chris Lockhart. I'm your host this evening. And joining me on the line is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Deason. How's it going, Kev?
It is going great, Chris. I don't know about anyone else out there listening, but I know even though we're on the pause in all capital letters here, I kind of feel busier than ever.
That's good. I should point out,
it's amazing how much teachers do.
yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. I should point out at the time of this recording, it is April 7th, 2020, and we are still in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. So schools are closed, a lot of businesses are closed. Well, we will talk a little bit more about the COVID-19 pandemic in our Ender segment, but let's move on to our main topic, and then we'll get into more of what's going on at that time. So for this episode, the topic is called Hey Kids Comics. Now, why is it called Hey Kids Comics? It's a little play on back when I was a kid, when Kevin was a kid, when, you know, comics used to be able to go to a grocery store or a pharmacy or a gas station, and they would have what they called spinner racks. You would go there, and there would be comic books there. You could turn the rack and spin it around. And a lot of those spinner racks, at the top of them, would have the saying, Hey Kids Comics, to entice, you know, readers, young and old alike, to come over and check out the comic books. And yeah, so that's why I called this episode that. Because tonight's just going to be a general comic book discussion. But I want to point out, in the not too distant future, we're going to be having more comic book episodes coming up, where they're going to be more geared to specific topics. Like, I really want to do an Incredible Hulk episode. I did one years ago. It was one of the infamous episodes where the recorder didn't actually record it, so we had to record it twice. So I kind of want to do another Hulk episode. And I also want to do an episode talking about independent comics. So those will be coming up in the months to come. And as we're in the midst of the COVID pandemic, we're probably going to be doing a few more episodes here and there, just because, you know, most of us don't really have a whole lot to do on our time off. You know, we can't really do anything at this time. So if we can, we'll do more content. So I know, like, this week I have two episodes planned for recording, so hopefully those will be coming out. But let's get to tonight's topic, and that's Hey Kids Comics. So the first item for discussion is our favorite comic book. And Kevin, I'll throw it over to you. What is your favorite comic book? I mean, it could be anything you want, like a specific title. It could be a certain run. What's your favorite comic book?
All right, for one, I'm going to just jump back to your intro for a moment and say, I think this is a great idea for us to talk about our love of comics and what's come before and what we're into and everything. because with new comics not coming out right now, a lot of comic stores are hurting. Mm-hmm. And I think if anything we say during the course of this podcast gets someone to buy graphic novels or back issues or something that already exists and is already in hand at their local comic shop and gives them a little bit of money right now, that's great. Then I feel like we've helped in a way.
Yes.
So I thought this is a great idea for your topic tonight.
I totally agree. And we will discuss a little bit more again about the comic book stores and how people can help when we do our Ender segment. But all right, Kev, sorry to interrupt you.
So, no, you're fine. So since we exchanged messages for what the topics were, I've been really just sent down looking at my collections, looking at, you know, what's bound, what's bagged, boarded,
yep,
the boxes, you know, everything. Really digging through. And I finally landed on the original run of New Warriors.
Nice.
With Fabian Nicieza. It's probably the best pronunciation.
Nicieza.
Nicieza, okay. Yeah. Writing, Mark Bagley drawing. It just, the more and more I think about it, I really love that book. Speedball, for those that don't know, and to jump ahead for another question possibly, is my all-time favorite comic character.
Cool.
It was, to go back to the Spinner Racks weren't consistently updated either. Like, you could go and find a couple months on one spinner rack, depending on how good of a job the person that filled it up would do when mm-hmm. they came to drop off the rest of the magazines. And if you went to different stores, if it was a different person working, you could get a couple different issues or a couple different months as you traveled through, you know, your town, usually shopping with mom or dad. So I know I had the Speedball issue 1 with Steve Ditko art, and at the same time his first appearance in Amazing Spider-Man Annual 22 at around the same time. Like, they both kind of got into my purview around the same time. And it was just, here's the first brand new character since I started reading comics. I like Spider-Man, I like Daredevil, I like Avengers already. They were ones I was already into. But here's the first brand new character, so it felt like it was mine. And then I remember, because I love the Avengers and the Speedball books long canceled, and Acts of Vengeance was out. And I was like, oh, geez, this is such a good series. And there, any Avengers title would have a little Acts of Vengeance thing. And so I'm reading ones I don't usually read. I didn't usually get Iron Man or Captain America or especially Thor, but I bought it. Oh, Thor versus Juggernaut, Acts of Vengeance. That sounds cool. And I'm reading it. It's good. And why is Speedball on the last page? Why does he have a team? Well, it turns out here's this new team, the New Warriors. And by the way, there's a comic coming out shortly thereafter. I don't think I've ever, like, written a date down for a comic before in my life. I had to get that. And here's a whole new team. Night Thrasher was a new character. I wasn't familiar with Marvel Boy or Firestar or Nova or the rest of the team. Because, I mean, Nova hadn't been used since the 70s, really. Firestar, I just barely missed Spider-Man and his amazing friends, so I didn't have a connection there. And it was just a whole new team of teen superheroes having their fights, having their adventures, having their doubts. And it went through some stuff. I mean, first they introduced Night Thrasher's on-again-off-again girlfriend, who has been on different sides depending on the story, and she's slightly handicapped but also has this incredible power that she can use too. Marvel Boy has an abusive father. As he grows into becoming Justice, he and Firestar get together, find out because of her mutant power she can't have children. Rage joins the team later on, who's a giant overgrown teenager that the Avengers thought was a full-grown adult, super strong hero, find out he's a teen, like, you can't be here. We're putting you in danger. You're just a kid. But, I mean, always bringing up different things, that, coming up with brand-new original villains for the team to face that were just so cool, and ones that you feel like, geez, why hasn't Marvel done anything with them? Mark Bagley goes on, does Spider-Man after McFarlane left, after Larson left, and does an incredible job on the series. What was I was reading Omega Hulk a couple weeks ago. Didn't realize it's Mark Bagley art because it's been 20-25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't like consistently read, you know, about everything he's done, but I'm like, oh my god, it's him. I can see 20 years of improvement, but I can also see what I loved way back then. There was scheduled to be a new series coming out soon. I've bought all the times they've tried to reboot it. It upsets me. Speedball caused Civil War.
Yes.
Really? When, you know. But, I mean, it was just to be a young preteen and then teen reader, I was given my teen superheroes that were all mine. And that will never go away. Much like, you know, I'll never not love G.I. Joe cartoons or He-Man cartoons. This comic will never go away. And now it makes sense to me why Teen Titans was such a big thing for DC previously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, geez, if you had a whole generation of teens having that book, oh my god. It's no wonder it was the number one book at the time. And it's a shame New Warriors never got that. Of course, I wish it had. But in a way, because it was never huge, it's still mine. You know?
My question for you, Kevin, did you see the announcement of the new take on the New Warriors that's coming out?
I did, and I was gonna wait and read it myself before I fully decided.
See, like
I was gonna buy it no matter what, but
yeah, like I'm with you, like that team does have a special place for me too. Like I mean I didn't buy every issue, but I did buy enough issues, and I really liked them. You know, I really like their dynamic, and for me, especially back in the early 90s, like I would rather read one of their issues than like say X-Force or
oh yeah,
you know, one of those other teen teams at the time, or young adult teams. I really enjoyed it, but this new take, like I like the fact that they're bringing all the, you know, the original cast back, and that part of it looks good. But some of these new characters that they're coming up with, I'm like, ugh, I don't know, like it's
exactly. I wasn't totally sure, but it was a limited. It's scheduled to be a limited series, 5 issues, 6 issues, I forget.
Yeah,
and I'm willing to. Sorry. I'm willing to take the whole story. Yeah. Now, me seeing, you know, new character page one and not liking that new character by issue four, there might be it might not even be the same character by issue four. There might be a whole long story happening. There could be an evolution. There could be a plan. So I wasn't going to, you know, brush it aside. Yeah, I was going to wait and read it. But I mean, there are people they threw in the New Warriors over the years that nothing more happened with, you know, for good or bad. Some that you're like, oh, this wasn't a bad character, could have used, and some that, you know, maybe it's best to forget.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate that they didn't retcon the original characters to fit these characters. Like, I'm glad that these are new and original characters. I just. You know, I'm trying to think of some of their names. There's Safe Space.
It was Safe Space and Snowflake that was the one that got everyone upset.
Yes.
And when I got to the point where I was seeing different, this is, well, the character is this. I'm like, but in another article, it said the character was something else.
Mm-hmm.
So let's wait until the issue's out and we know what the character actually is.
Yeah,
and that was my thing. I'm like, I can see this being poorly written. I could see it being a mistake. I could also see it being a point of a bigger story, and by the end, I will have enjoyed it.
And if anything,
and it was those two characters. I was like, I don't know where you're going. I'll go along on the ride with you, and I'll make my decision at the end.
Well, and it, like, the thing is, the New Warriors over the years have had a hard time keeping a series going, right? Like, it's just,
yeah.
Unfortunately, it always never seems to, you know, they reach a certain point and then they just lose traction and then it ends. You know, there's a lot of buzz around this new book, so maybe it'll bring in enough people to check it out. There'll be enough nostalgia and appreciation for, you know, the original characters at the very least, and then maybe you might get an ongoing series out of this. Maybe.
Because, I mean, sadly, the preeminent teen team now for Marvel is Champions.
Mm-hmm.
And just by who their cast is, it's like, well, of course that's the big teen book. So New Warriors is kind of an afterthought right out the gate anyways.
Yep.
But, I mean, jeez. I will admit this is a stretch. But if Champions is Marvel's current Teen Titans, then it's like New Warriors is their Legion. It's also teens, but it's never going to be given the respect or love that their stars, the star book is.
Yeah.
Like, Teen Titans, great. Legion, lots of fans, lots going on, but it has never reached that Titans level.
Yeah.
Lots of reboots over the years, too.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Excellent. All right. Well, for my pick, actually, it's kind of, I kind of had a tie here. One's from years ago and one's more modern. And I've mentioned this on the podcast several times. Peter David's 12-year run on the Incredible Hulk, easily my favorite comic book. His run was amazing. Unfortunately, it came to an end before it was meant to, back in the late 90s, 1998. Peter David was given a directive by Marvel Editorial at the time to take the character back to the Savage Hulk persona, you know, where, you know, the Hulk smash, Hulk's dumb, you know, and he's being chased by the army and you know, he's supposed to be in a different town every week or every month. And that wasn't the story that Peter David was trying to tell at the time. He had a arc in mind that would have taken the series up to issue 500, and then that would have been his final issue 500. But unfortunately, Marvel, in their infinite wisdom, decided to go that route, and Peter David quit. And as a result, that, you know, his run, as I said, came to a quick end, and, you know, we'll never know, you know, what could have been. But at the time, you know, The Incredible Hulk was one of Marvel's best-selling titles. And it's ironic, considering that they ended his run, and then, you know, not even a year later, they relaunched it as just The Hulk, with John Byrne writing and Ron Garney, I believe, doing pencils. And it went from being one of Marvel's top books to being one of its least-selling books. And I think John Byrne only lasted like 18 issues and then he bailed. So it's unfortunate, but that 12-year run was fantastic. I can't say enough great things about it. The second book I wanted to bring up is a more modern book, and that's Robert Kirkman's Invincible. It's from Image Comics. Again, it ran about 12 years, I want to say, give or take. It kind of got off to a slow start. I know the original artist, I believe, was Corey Walker. He had some issues, you know, with getting his artwork in on time. And Invincible, you know, I think the first year they only put out like 5 or 6 issues. And then towards the end of the run as well, it kind of went, you know, there was a few years there where they would only put out 9 or 8 issues a year, just because that's when Robert Kirkman, his Walking Dead TV show got on the air. So, of course, he's an executive producer on it, so he got busy, and unfortunately, Invincible, it was still a great comic whenever it came out, don't get me wrong. Each issue was great. But unfortunately, it didn't come out as frequently as it should have. So when I say 12 years, it was actually probably more than that. I want to say 14, maybe 15 years. But essentially, 12 years worth of issues during that time. And yeah, it started as basically like a Superboy type of premise. You know, this young teenager has these superpowers. He's literally invincible. He joins like a Teen Titans type of organization. It turns out like his dad, who is basically the Superman of this world, spoilers, he's actually part of a evil race of superpowered aliens that are coming to conquer the Earth. So he has to stand up against his dad because he's half human. And Robert Kirkman just went many different ways with this. I mean, there was, you know, multiple realities in this book. There was, you know, space adventures. There's basically like a space federation. It's such a good book. It was one of those books that whenever it came out, it was the first thing I read. Like it always got moved to the top of the pile. And that was kind of like Peter David's Incredible Hulk too. That was the book, you know, every month that they came out, either one of those books, it was like a Christmas present. It was awesome. Like those are the books that are nearest and dearest to my heart. And without a doubt, my favorite comic books. All right, so let's move on to our favorite comic book hero. So, Kevin, I think you've already answered this question. Who is your favorite comic book hero?
So, Speedball, again, by far. By far. And, I mean, that just... Everyone knows it. I've gotten... My wife did a Speedball painting for me one Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yep, I've gotten, art and gifts and cutouts and stuff, because there's no merchandise for him. So I had to get something.
Yep.
And of course, you know, I'm glad. I appreciate it and all. But, yeah, it drives me nuts that there isn't anything, a little bit. And every year when there's toy shows and all, I'll tweet at Marvel and ask if this is the year we get stuff, and so far, no. And there is a, what do you call it? Mini-Mates figure of Penance, which Speedball turns into after Civil War, but I just can't count it.
Yeah.
I just cannot count it. So afterwards, though, like, I really wanted a... Since I already talked about Speedball so much, I'll just add on. I really wanted a female character to collect and, you know, buy all the comics, maybe buy some merchandise. Just something that really resonated with me. And for years, there wasn't anything. I remember when someone said, why don't you collect Nightshade? Because it goes back to Steve Ditko. I'd have a DC character, a woman and all. Mm-hmm. And I've liked some stories the character's been in, but didn't resonate. So I ended up getting two, though, over the last, like, 5 years. I love the look of Red She-Hulk. And I've read a lot of the stories that came out when she first showed up, when we didn't know who Red Hulk was, and then who Red She-Hulk was in mystery and all.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was, like, looking back, kind of an obvious reveal. But we really didn't know. I just love the look of the character and every action figure, statue, everything they've done. It's really cool. And side note, to go back to previous work of my own, in the first issue of Red She-Hulk, when it's finally revealed and all, they renamed the title for her and everything, they say Red She-Hulk, also known as Hellion. And it's never mentioned again. But I get a kick out of it. So I was like, all right, here's a character. And then after reading a bunch, and I gotta finally sit down and do a review, because I read the first four volumes months ago now, but I didn't write anything up. I love Gwenpool. I love the concept. I love the idea. I love it when she's well written. And I also think all the toys and statues look really cool, too. For both, I think the color schemes do a lot, too. They make it very eye-catching. But also, with being new characters, like, I'm never going to collect every Wonder Woman thing. There's not a chance. Or, you know, well, Black Widow at this point, not a chance. Just out of budget, too.
Yep.
But I could probably get, you know, everything, every Red She-Hulk or every Gwenpool comic, not that bad.
Yep.
You know, very affordable. As affordable as my Speedball collection certainly is. So, like, it's nice to have two things to collect. I wish I had a little more love for DC one in there, but, you know, it just hasn't happened yet.
Yep. All right. Now, again, I'm cheating. My answer is a couple different answers, and I got my reasons here. First off, I'm going to say, obviously, because I mentioned Peter David's Hulk, I've always been a Hulk fan. Like, for years and years and years, I was a Hulk fan. In the 2000s and up until just recently, I haven't read a lot of the Hulk. You know, basically when Peter David left, I stayed on that title for a little bit because Joe Casey took over and he did an all right job. You know, he definitely had some big shoes to fill, and unfortunately it got canceled because the whole plan was for John Byrne and Ron Garney to relaunch the Hulk as the Savage Hulk in a new title called The Hulk. So Joe Casey's, you know, he took over, I want to say, the last 7 issues of The Incredible Hulk after Peter David. And he was doing a really good job. Like, he was starting to come into his own, and it was interesting. And then, of course, it got canceled. For years, you know, I love the idea, like, there was the Savage Hulk, you know, that originally he was gray, then he turned green. Originally, his power set was, you know, at nighttime he would turn into the Hulk as the Gray Hulk. And then, you know, he would turn into the Gray Hulk when he got angry. And then they basically explained all that those different versions of the Hulk were actually different personalities within Bruce Banner. Because originally, the Hulk was written kind of like the Thing. Like, he kind of had, like, that, you know, like, that personality about him. Similar to the Thing. And then he became just like a savage brute after that. And they explained that, you know, these were different personalities that Bruce Banner had in his mind. You know, like, the Savage Hulk was him as a child, you know, because his dad used to abuse him and his mom. So he created this monster personality in his mind that he could use to fight against his dad, which he couldn't, you know, because he was just a little kid. And then when he was in college, he had a hard time, you know, interacting with people, interacting with women, socializing. So he created this personality, this wise guy personality, which became the basis for the Gray Hulk. So when he got bombarded with this gamma radiation from the gamma bomb, these personalities that resided inside the mind of Bruce Banner were given form. And I like that. I think that's such an interesting premise. And then the fact that they merged all these, that Doc Samson, through meditation and mental manipulation, with using Mentolo to help him. Was it Mentolo? I think it might have been Mentolo. No, it wasn't Mentolo. It was the guy from the Circus of Crime. Ringmaster?
Mastermind? Ringmasters.
Maybe. Yeah, it was one of those guys. Anyway, he was hypnotizing Bruce Banner while Doc Samson talked his different personalities through what they were sorting out. Because Bruce Banner suffered abuse at the hands of his father growing up, he had PTSD. So he merged those personalities, they were able to merge those personalities together to create what we now refer to as the Professor Hulk, which is, in my opinion, my favorite version of the Hulk. I love that version. And then when the heroes, when the Onslaught incident happened, again, Bruce Banner got separated from the Hulk, so Bruce Banner could go into the pocket universe, and then the Hulk was by himself, and then they merged again, but, you know, so it was a different take. It was interesting. And now I'm kind of getting back into the Hulk a little bit with the Immortal Hulk. It's an interesting take on the Hulk. It's more of a horror comic, you know, and I think that's kind of interesting because the Hulk originally was kind of based on Kirby's horror monsters. So I kind of think that's kind of cool that they're going back and kind of doing kind of a horror take on the Hulk, where the Hulk can't die, you know, like, you can shoot Bruce Banner, but he comes back type of thing, right? And I believe it's Al Ewing that's writing it, and it's very good. I think I'm on the third graphic novel right now. So, favorite hero, it is the Hulk, but nowadays, honestly, I'm kind of leaning more towards Captain America. And again, I say this, and it's ironic because I'm Canadian. But, you know, with the Marvel movies, I really loved what Chris Evans did as Captain America. Like, he was amazing. It's one of those instances where I was wrong. And what I mean is, when, you know, back in 2010, I think it was, when I first heard that they had cast Chris Evans as Captain America, I said that was a mistake. I thought, you know, like, he was that guy from...
He didn't like Johnny Storm.
Yeah. Wasn't a big fan of Johnny Storm. Although he did play that character good. You know, I didn't hate what he did. I mean, he was playing Johnny Storm as Johnny Storm. So he did good. And he was in that, I want to say it was not another teen movie. I think he was in that one. And then I remember him.
He was
in, I want to say it was 2008, the movie Sunshine, the space movie, by, what's his name? The director of 28 Days Later and Trainspotting, Danny Boyle. He did a sci-fi space where they have to go reignite the sun movie, and Chris Evans was in that. And I just couldn't see him as Captain America, like, based on the previous roles I had seen him in. You know, in my mind, you know, at the time, like, his Mad Men was on TV, and I'm a huge fan of John Hamm. I was like, why can't John Hamm be Captain America? You know, he's got the chiseled look. He's not a blonde, but I figured, you know, they could change that up for Captain America for the movies anyway. So my pick was John Hamm at the time. But then when I saw the first Captain America movie, I was just blown away. I was like, wow, I cannot believe how wrong I was. He is amazing. And he did such a good job. And I love you know, out of all the Marvel movies that have been done, without a doubt, my favorites are the Captain America films and the Avenger films. And what's the common denominator in all those movies? And that is Captain America. You know, I can't say enough great things. And so I've always liked Captain America comics. Like, you know, I remember, you know, Roger Stern. I remember, why am I drawing a blank on his name now? In the
Grunwald?
Late 80s, yeah, Mark Grunwald, yes. His run on Captain America. Of course, Mark Waid. He did an amazing run on Captain America. And of course, I didn't read them at the time, but I'm going back and rereading them through Comixology. The Ed Brubaker Captain America, you know, all the Winter Soldier stuff, all that kind of stuff. So nowadays, Captain America, I would say, is my favorite hero in comic books because, unfortunately, we live in a world where everything's jaded, you know, like, I, you know, most recently we did an episode where we talked about the new Star Trek Picard series. And one of my misgivings was how dark it is. You know, like every episode someone's getting murdered. You know, and it shouldn't be. You know, like that, you know, Captain Picard, that's not what he stood for, right? So I long for the days when things weren't dark, when things weren't dreary. So I've been going back and I've been rewatching some of the better Star Trek episodes with Captain Picard in it, you know, going all the way back to TNG, you know, seeing some of the epic speeches he's made and so on and so forth. So in this world, and to make a long story short, in this world of darkness and despair, you know, Captain America still stands for something. Captain America is still a positive, you know, role model. He's, you know, from the Greatest Generation. And I loved how Chris Evans portrayed that on screen. And I love, you know, for the most part, how he's portrayed in the comic books that way. Like, I know there was the, you know, the Hail Hydra, you know, where Captain, or he was replaced by a Hydra agent. And everyone thought Captain America was evil, which was such a mistake. It was so stupid for them to do that. But people are still talking about it. It's still a thing. You know, it even snuck its way into Avengers Endgame, like when Cap, you know, when they're in the elevator and he says, Hail Hydra. You know, that's a total callback to what they did in the comic books. But, yeah. So, right as of now, Captain America. All right. Now that I've rambled on long enough about that, let's talk about our favorite comic book villain. So, Kevin, do you have a favorite comic book villain?
I mean, geez. Not really. Like, because when we were going through, I was trying to think of someone that I would follow no matter what in a story. You know, that going and seeing that villain on a cover, even if it's a book I've never read before, is enough to get me to go, oh my God, I gotta read this comic.
Yep.
And I don't have anyone that does it. There's stories I like, of course, but I don't, you know, that's focused on one villain. But that's the thing, I don't have one that comes up all the time consistently as this, you know, incredible crazy villain. And there's stuff like, I love the Emperor Joker story. I think that's one of the most clever, original, disturbing stories I've ever read. And it wasn't, quote, dark. It was just, you know, Joker's warped mind.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, one of my favorite stories ever was West Coast Avengers, when some of them are trapped in the Old West, and Mockingbird has her looking back through the lens of time. It's kind of a horrible story, but it's great too. But she's manipulated, shall we say, by the Phantom Rider. And he becomes this horrible villain in the book with consequences for the rest of the series. But he doesn't matter to the rest of Marvel, really.
Mm-hmm.
Master Pandemonium. Again, West Coast Avengers. Incredible, demonic, powerful, scary character that because of him, we get Wanda and Vision having children. And because of them, we get no more mutants. Like I'm shortening 20 plus years of stories real quick here, but it goes back to him. And that's where I got tripped up though, because I don't really have a villain that's always a villain. But I think my favorite character that's been a villain sometimes, though, is Scarlet Witch. I love the stories when she's a villain. And even before the classic No More Mutants one, again, West Coast Avengers, there's a story where Magneto talks her into joining the family business, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And she, Magneto, and Quicksilver just go off, and they're like, all right, we're all bad guys together. And it shows just how powerful she was, and it's John Byrne doing the comic at the time, too.
I was going to say that, yep. I remember that.
Yep, it's because of Vision, because of so many things in her life. She just snaps. She's altering realities. And it read like a fill-in issue, and then it ties in at the very end. You're like, what's going on? This story has nothing to do with just what just took place. And then they got a little tag at the end. You're like, oh, here we are. Here we are for the Scarlet Witch story. It probably was a fill-in issue, and they just added the panel, but whatever.
Yep.
It worked. But she's just so scary and so dominant and so powerful and just seems like a god. And this is long before she legit changed Marvel. And now, you know, she's a good guy right now. But when she's a good guy, she's never shown as powerful, whether it's in control or however you want to put it. She's never shown as powerful as she is as a villain, which is interesting because she could be like Phoenix level. Well, there's another, hero or villain, depending on your point of view or the writer. And I truly think as the Marvel Cinematic Universe progresses, I think Scarlet Witch is our big bad guy for the next run of it. I think with the WandaVision TV show and her appearance in Doctor Strange 2, I think both of them are setting up her as the bad guy.
I could definitely see that, and I hope you're right, because it does sound fascinating. Absolutely. And she's by far got to be the best-looking villain ever.
Even them doing, because I know one of the things we all witnessed about for WandaVision was the different costumes in that one trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But even the way that they gave her a, quote, real-world costume, it works.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It
still completely works for the character. I think if anything, you see, I think the best one to show how crazy you could go with the character, and nothing against John Byrne's work, which I was talking about before, but post-Heroes Reborn, when George Perez did the Avengers relaunch, and he's drawing all the Avengers now, and then takes them back to, like, King Arthur days, and redraws every costume to work there, too. I'm like, geez, Scarlet Witch looks cool in both, and that's credit to him as an artist, but it just shows how versatile the character can be. And then you can make her the villain and give her a different costume. You could do anything with her, and for a female character too, kind of rare.
Excellent. Without a doubt, my favorite bad guy in comic books is Doctor Doom. I love Dr. Doom. I love, that he's, he has his own country. I think that's cool. I love the fact that he's a sorcerer and he's a scientist at the same time. I like the fact that he creates robot duplicates of himself. So, sometimes he'll be fighting, the Fantastic Four, for example, and they think they're getting the best of him, and then, Ben Grimm goes in for the... final punch and punches his head right off, and you find out it's just a robot they've been fighting the whole time. I think that's cool. I think
they do it so much that sometimes they have to say, this is the real Dr. Doom for his story.
Yep. I love it when, cause he's typically of course a Fantastic Four villain, because of his history with Reed Richards and so on. But I always loved it when he would show up in other books. That's one thing I regret with Peter David's run on The Incredible Hulk is Dr. Doom didn't actually... I know he might have been in a few issues here and there, like, during a crossover. Like, I know there was... I believe it was the Infinity Gauntlet. Like, there was a scene with Dr. Doom, I believe, in The Incredible Hulk. But the Hulk never actually faces off against him. Like, I wanted to see Bruce Banner show up in Latveria, or when Professor Hulk was in charge of the Pantheon, I wanted to see them go against Doctor Doom. Unfortunately, that never happened. But I used to love it when he would show up, you know, in an X-Men book, or he'd show up in a Spider-Man book. He's just such an interesting character. It's neat to see him face off against the other heroes. But on the flip side of that, though, is it can be overplayed. You know, if he keeps showing up, you know, it's almost like the Wolverine syndrome, you know, where Wolverine's showing up in every book, and it's like, how can Wolverine be in every book when he's only one person? You know, like, it's a little too much. But yeah, Doctor Doom, you know, I love his backstory. And his costume, you know, like, it's iconic. Like, it's such an awesome design that works, you know, 60 plus years later. Like, it still works as a design. Like, it's so awesome. And I loved it when in the 90s there, the early to mid 90s, when they had the Doom 2099 series. I used to buy that. I like that idea that, you know, that this is Dr. Doom in the year 2099. He doesn't even know if he is Dr. Doom. Like, he can't remember. Like, he knows, he's pretty sure he's the Victor Von Doom, but he's not exactly sure. I can't really remember how it played out. But I know he had some amnesia, and he used his powers for good in 2099. And the redesign I really liked. It was very close to the original, but, you know, with a future spin on it. But, and I do have some honorable mentions here. Probably my next favorite villain is Kang the Conqueror. Again, such a cool concept for a villain. You know, the fact that he's a time traveler, and not just that, not only is he a time traveler, and he, you know, he's got super strength and all that kind of stuff, but his backstory is in question. Like, he might have been Rama Tut. He is Immortus, which is a future version of Kang. But Immortus doesn't remember being Kang. Kang, you know, so Immortus fights Kang from time to time. You know, sometimes their interests are not the same, so they're, you know, and they're in competition with one another, which is an interesting concept that you're literally fighting yourself. But Immortus can't always best Kang because he doesn't remember being Kang. Again, you know, interesting concept. Interesting look. Kang's got a very unique look about him. And again, I love it when he shows up again, you know, fighting the Avengers. Typically, he's an Avengers villain, but I mean, he does show up in other things from time to time. And then another honorable mention is Robot from the Invincible comic book. And I'm throwing him into the villain category because, you know, for most of the run on Invincible, Robot is a good guy. But then he kind of turns. And he does a lot of bad things towards the end of Invincible. This is going to sound weird. It's interesting. He's doing bad things, but he's doing it for a good reason. Kind of like Thanos' motivation in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where Thanos, he's a villain because he's literally, you know, killing half of all life in the universe, but he's doing so for what he considers, you know, a good motivation. Like, he's doing it for the betterment of the other half so that they could thrive, right? And that's kind of where the character Robot comes in with Invincible. Is he's doing bad things, and a lot of people are killed, but he's doing so because he believes at the end of the day, Earth and humanity will be better off because of what he has to do. And I don't want to say too much if the listeners or if Kevin, if you haven't read it, it's very interesting. Very much in line with the whole Thanos from the cinematic universe. So anyway, that was Robot from Invincible. Let us move on to our favorite comic book company. Kevin, what is your favorite comic book company?
I mean, I don't feel like it's going to be any secret just the way that some of our picks have been so far. But I mean, it's Marvel by a mile. And it was when I was a kid, the only time I bought more of from any other comic than I was buying from Marvel was when Image first started. And a lot of us had our all Image pull list because we had to get everything from them. But other than that, it's been Marvel. And even, you know, I'll write columns of like, here's what I think are the coolest things in this month's Previews magazine. And for those that don't know, Previews is the giant catalog. Here's what's coming out for comics in 2 months. Marvel and DC always have a supplemental catalog that's usually slid in at your local comic store. I'm flipping through the Marvel one. I got like 20, 30 picks. I'm going through the DC. I got like 5 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the quote indies. And, you know, there's some here and there, but nowhere, nothing comes close to how many I pick from Marvel every month. It's just the ones that seem more interesting. And as we were talking about, you know, you were talking about Hulk earlier, and I got thinking about other ones. I think the reason is, I'll need to clarify here, there's more you can do with the Marvel heroes than you can with the DC heroes. And the only ones that DC has the same flexibility with are the villains. Lex Luthor is an evil businessman, or you could put him in a suit, or he could be a scientist, or he can be president, or he can be in charge of the Legion of Doom. You can do a lot with him. Joker is at the point, you could do whatever you want with him, and it fits because it's the Joker. I mean, we've had 2 people win Oscar awards portraying the Joker. Plus all of your classic stories. Plus, you know, Cesar Romero and Mark Hamill. And it's all Joker. And we all accept that it's Joker.
Yep.
Superman, Superman. Batman's Batman. Flash is Flash. They're really kind of set in what they are. But you gave like 10 examples of what the Hulk can be. And we've accepted all of them. Spider-Man can exist right now as an adult and as a teenager and is accepted equally. And I don't mean Miles. My kid's going nuts on this Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. And it's Spider-Man and a bunch of teenage superheroes and S.H.I.E.L.D.'s training them how to be grown-up superheroes. And it's great. And it's Peter Parker as a teenager. And Peter Parker's in his older teen, early 20s in Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he's an adult in the comics and in other stories. And he can be a loser. And he can be an Avenger. And he can be in charge of his own company. And it's all Spider-Man. Even Fantastic Four, which is kind of set in their ways, can be superheroes. And they can be a team. And they can all be Avengers as well. Or they could be scientists, or they could be explorers, or they could be out in space, or they could just be a family goofing around doing stuff. There's so much flexibility in Marvel, whether that is testament to Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, whether it's a greater passion, whether it's, you know, Jim Shooter to Joe Quesada to whoever you want to give credit to, there's more flexibility as opposed to gods on platforms that DC's big 7 are. And I think that leads to better stories throughout, which is why I like them more.
Absolutely. I'll just jump in on yours there, Kevin, because, yeah, I'm in agreement. Marvel Comics. I've always been more of a Marvel Comics guy. Not to say I don't like DC. I do like, you know, a lot of DC characters. I like DC books. But Marvel's always been a little bit better for me. And again, to add to your point, it's the relatability of the heroes and villains. Like, they're not perfect. They're flawed. They, you know, like, they have issues. You know, for example, like the Superman equivalent in the Marvel Universe, Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers, she's got a drinking problem. You know, like, she's not, you know, the perfect, you know, I'm a news reporter, you know, newspaper reporter by day and hero by night, like Superman. She's, you know, she's just a person. Like, she's a pilot. And she's seen some things, been through some things, and you know, she's got a drinking problem, which, you know, some people can relate to. You know, she's flawed. She's got her issues. You know, Spider-Man, you know, easily probably the most recognizable Marvel character. And he's just he's got his spider abilities and so on and so forth. But I mean, he gets his ass handed to him a lot of times. Like, he gets beat up a lot. You know, he has, you know, this great power, but yet, you know, his aunt's you know, at risk of losing her home, you know, because they can't make payments. He doesn't have a perfect job, and money is an issue for him. You know, schoolwork is an issue for him, you know, and later on his job becomes an issue for him. You know, he has women problems, you know, like it a lot of relatable things in Marvel Comics. Like I said, you know, like with the Incredible Hulk there, you know, when they introduced this idea that he's got PTSD, you know, that he was, you know, a victim of child abuse, you know, like there's some readers that can relate to that sort of thing, you know, like, I mean, very relatable characters, whereas, you know, even, you know, Batman, for example, like, he's just a regular dude, but he always comes back, you know, like, he always bounces back way too easily. The only, honestly, to me, the only realistic portrayal of Batman, in a lot of ways, was from The Dark Knight Rises. Where, you know, that scene where, you know, Christian Bale's talking to the doctor and stuff, and she's, like, telling him, like, your body is, you know, you're not going to last much longer, you know, with the abuse your body is taking. And it's true. Like, he's just a regular dude. Like, at least, like, Wolverine, you know, he's going to take a beating, but he's got a healing factor. You know, so you can explain away why, you know, next issue he's perfectly fine, when the previous issue, you know, he was beat up really bad. Whereas, like, Batman, it's not really realistic. Like, even their more human characters are not as flawed as they should be. But sorry, Kevin, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, not at all. Because we keep using examples from movies and TV, so mm-hmm. I'm gonna narrow it to comics to further the point here.
Sure,
let's go mid 80s for a reason here. Hey, what's Spider-Man done in the comics since mid 80s? All right, well, he got married, he got divorced, mm-hmm. he's been a clone, he hasn't been a clone. We have the expansion of the Spider-Verse. He's building a millionaire. He's had nothing. He's been Dr. Octopus. He's been himself. He's been an adventure. He's been solo. You know, Aunt May's died. Aunt May came back. Like, I can give you all these things that he's been. What's Hulk been? Where do I start? You know, pack a lunch.
Yep.
What's Batman been? Dark. What's Superman been? You know, kind of boring. Boy Scout. And that's public opinion. If you go into a comic store, people are going to give you more examples of Spider-Man stories, even the clone one that they hated, even Dan Slott, which everyone's finally come around to, because they're like, oh, geez, look, the issues I hated individually, when read all together and the story's complete, is an amazing story. But Superman and Batman, people are like, meh. Like, they give one word, one sentence answers for 20 years of a character. The only differences I can give you is Tom King, before he was pulled off the book, was doing something epic with Batman, and I wish they kept him on just so he could finish his story. And you got freaking Justice League, where Batman looks at Superman and says, the last time you inspired someone was when you died. Jeez.
And
like, we don't need dark. And the movie, the other media shows it. I can have Christian Bale Batman, I can have Ben Affleck Batman, and I can also have the Brave and the Bold cartoon. Like, the your multimedia shows the Marvel type of variety for Batman more than the comics do.
Well, and I find it ironic that, like, say Superman, like, he just went through, like, where his secret, where he revealed the secret identity to the world, finally.
Yeah.
After
still going on, I think.
Yeah, after 80-some years. But it's funny, because it was a Marvel guy that initiated it. You know, it was Brian Michael Bendis, after years of being at Marvel, you know, got lured away to DC, and that's what he does. But then there was this whole, oh, what do they call it, the 5G storyline that...
If it happens, everything's whatever right now, but yes.
Yeah. Supposedly that might have been the reason why Dan DiDio got let go. So that it almost sounds like they're going to reboot everything anyway, so maybe that's why they did it, but I don't know. But anyway, getting back to Marvel, one of the things I always liked about them was they originally were very interactive with their fans, long before anyone else was. You know, like the letters pages in a Marvel comic book were always, you know, they were always answering people's letters. Very interactive. It was very, very cool. You know, Stan's Soapbox, where he would do a commentary every month. And it would be in you know, like that ad page or whatever in every Marvel comic. That was always special. It was always cool to see Stan's thoughts on real life and on comic books and so on and so forth. Basically, it was a blog before blogs existed, you know. And I love how Marvel, since Stan passed away, you know, they've been reprinting some of these old Stan soapboxes and inserting them into comics. And some of the things that Stan was talking about are pretty amazing. You know, when you look back and think of the time when they were written and how insightful and how really ahead of his time he was. You know, I love the interactiveness from Marvel. But I wanted to say an honorable mention, like you had mentioned Image. My honorable mention is Mirage Studios. You know, what came out of Mirage Studios was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Mirage Studios was basically, you know, two guys, you know, that loved to draw comics. And they were, you know, they met through different people. And then they became friends. And their studio was based out of one of their living rooms where they would sit and draw. And as a joke, you know, they started drawing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, not thinking it would go anywhere. And then they made an issue out of it and self-published it. And the rest is history. It quickly grew. It quickly became popular. They sold the licensing to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to Playmate Toys. And then they did the cartoon and then the movies, obviously. And just two regular dudes that were comic book fans who loved to draw, you know, created these characters as a joke originally. And it became, you know, world famous, became millionaires, and that's Mirage Studios. All right, so next on the list is favorite writer slash artist. So who is your favorite writer and who is your favorite artist? And maybe they could be the same person.
True.
You know, like John Byrne or one of them guys. So Kevin, who's your favorite writer and who's your favorite artist?
You know, it's funny we keep bringing up John Byrne because he's not my pick. But, I mean, you know, it's funny because I loved West Coast Avengers, as I said. Fantastic yep. Four, I realized a lot of the ones I liked were ones he did. She-Hulk, God, mm-hmm. that's such a funny run. And then I went down a deep dive of John Byrne stories in the past week. Didn't know that side of him. So not on my list currently. You know, the funny thing is, as much as I said glorious things about Marvel, I think right now my favorite writers are because of DC or independent work. So currently, and this could change, you know, a couple months, years, I read something more from someone, but I'm loving Marv Wolfman stuff. And Mark Waid. And excellent. It's Crisis, Kingdom Come, Marv Wolfman's Vigilante, which I was reading last year and then couldn't get a hold of the rest of the run because I was just going nuts about it. But really just in-depth character breakdown, development, grand plan, grand idea, and also never forgetting it's a comic, too. Like, just embracing everything that the medium can do and bringing it up to the next level as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the more and more I read from both, Throne Irredeemable, here for Waid, of course. The yep. more and more I read from both, I'm like, geez, there's just nothing bad here. And then I find myself upset that, you know, here I got these graphic novel collections of these things, and I'm like, this is what I want the script for in the back. Anytime that I get a graphic novel that's like, as a bonus, here's the original script, it's not a script I care about. I want the original script of, like, Crisis or Kingdom Come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that really tells me how they did that and how they pulled it off and the notes for the artists and if there's notes in the margins and everything, like, that's what I would want to read, to just see how do you create something so massive and so well done, too. Then for artists, I was trying to think of someone that, you know, when I see their work, it just pops.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a comic artist, too, there's people that draw beautiful covers, gorgeous covers.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do interiors, or when they do, they're not that good. I got tons of comics, and most of us do, that I bought because it was a pretty cover. And I might buy, you know, that person, like a collection of that person's covers, but I'm not reading their comic, and there's a difference. But I think for someone that I see the cover, I go, what is going on here? And then I buy the comic, and I'm flipping through, I'm like, that's cool, wow. Like, this is a comic. This is exactly what I want a comic to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's fights, and it's bright, and it's beautiful, and it's clear to follow, and I understand everything that's going on, and the more I see from the person, the more I see them grow and become better. I'm going to Eric Larson.
Oh, cool.
Whether it's 250 issues of Savage Dragon, what most of us, you know, really got into him for when he was on Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
He's come back, he's done Nova and all sorts of books at Marvel, just kind of like for the heck of it, because he's got some free time. But he's just always done, it looks everything a comic should be. Everyone look, the guys look heroic, the girls look beautiful, everyone looks strong, he can do a great battle, he can make the panels work, whether it's the arrangement of them, breaking down panels, having a sound effect work as part of the art itself. It's just always fun. And it's also someone that, you know, we read comics when we're younger and we get into them. and then we grow up and we're too cool and we need mature stories or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back and go, all right, there was something here, though. Like, this is still good, and I'm also understanding it even more as an adult, too. Like, yeah, there's some Savage Dragon stuff. I'm like, this is ridiculous. This isn't serious. I need to read all my Vertigo stuff. And then I'm going back. I'm like, no, this is good. It's just flat out good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been the one that, for, you know, when I'm not just buying, like, ooh, pretty cover, mm-hmm. but I'm like, I want to read someone that's just going to be enjoyable and pop and be, you know, happy and exciting. Oh, yeah, I'm going towards Eric Larson lately.
That's an excellent choice. All right, well, my favorite writer is Peter David. It's pretty obvious right. now. just all the times I've mentioned him in this episode. My favorite artist is also... Image alumni, and he's currently the chief creative officer of DC. I can't remember his title, but it's Jim Lee. I love Jim Lee art. I remember, you know, back when I first saw him, I think was an issue of Punisher. And then he moved to the X-Men, and I loved it. I loved every issue that he would draw. Whenever I would pick up an issue and it wasn't Jim Lee drawing it, I was disappointed. Because unfortunately, Jim Lee is not one of those artists that can do a monthly book. You know, he can do, I want to say at the most, 6 or 7 issues, and then he needs a break. And I think it's because his art is so detailed that... He needs that time, right? That being said, you know, whenever he does a cover, whenever he does an issue of whatever, I love it. You know, even when the story's bad. Like, for example, like, yeah, those first, I don't know, 10 issues of Wildcats or whatever. Man, those were badly written. But man,
did
that...
Did he make it 10 issues?
Well, not consecutive. Definitely not consecutive. Okay. There was definitely some fill-in issues. I know, like, they did that whole where the creator swapped books or whatever. Maybe Eric Larson did an issue of Wildcats.
He did, because then Larson went back and wanted to do his own version of that issue number that Jim Lee did of Savage Dragon. So there's actually two of issue 13, I think.
Gotcha. And then... He did come back from time to time. Like, I know he did do a few issues during the Alan Moore run of Wildcats. And then, of course, he did the, you know, that run, I want to say on Detective Comics, the Hush trade.
Yep.
Amazing. And then he did that one for Superman as well. I can't remember what that one was called. But again, I think it was in the Action Comics, but again, amazing graphic novel. I love Jim Lee as an artist. And again, let's go through some honorable mentions, because there's so many talented people in comic books. I feel like we should mention the ones we love besides our favorites. Robert Kirkman, you know, I'm a big fan of Invincible, like I said, and I like The Walking Dead as well. And I like some of the other books he's done. Mark Waid, Kurt Busiek, And one side note with Kurt Busiek. When I was doing Geek Fallout, the comic book episodes, it was a comic book centric podcast I did for a good 3-4 years. And I reached out to a number of comic book creators asking them to come on. Kurt Busiek was the only one that got back to me like immediately. And he politely declined. He said he doesn't like going on podcasts, but I really appreciated that. I you know, like, he got back to me like within an hour of me sending the message. You know, I just thought that was so cool, you know, that he did that. We mentioned John Byrne. I love his run on the Fantastic Four, probably my favorite John Byrne stuff. You know, and he's a Canadian, so he actually is from Calgary, I believe, originally, which is not too far from where I'm at. And, of course, he created Alpha Flight, and he did the, you know, historic run with Chris Claremont on the X-Men. What else? Oh, Dan Slott. Excellent. You know, like, I always liked Dan Slott. I never understood the controversy why people didn't like him. I always liked his work. I liked him on Spider-Man. I loved his run on the Silver Surfer. Probably one of my favorite Surfer runs ever. And I'm liking what he's doing over at Fantastic Four right now. And then as far as artists go, Alex Ross, obviously, with his paintings. I love it. I love Kingdom Come. I love Marvels. Gary Frank is without a doubt my favorite Incredible Hulk artist. I loved Gary Frank's work. I think that was his best time, was when he was doing the Incredible Hulk. He's since went and he did like the most recent Doomsday Clock miniseries with Geoff Johns. He was the artist on that. He did the Shazam miniseries for the New 52 in the back pages of the Justice League title. Great artist. Dale Keown, another fellow Canadian, a fellow Albertan, who did the Pit for Image Comics, the Pit character, and he also was an artist on The Incredible Hulk as well. Travis Charest, he was, I think he's also from Alberta. And I'm not picking these guys because they're local. It's just, it's a happy coincidence that these guys grew up near me. I believe Travis Charest was, oh man, I want to say from either Grand Prairie or Fort McMurray. Same with Dale Keown. I can't remember if he's from Grand Prairie or Fort McMurray. He's one of those northern cities, anyway. And Travis Charest was also from, I believe, that area. But he was an artist on Alan Moore's run on Wildcats. Love his work. And last but not least, Ryan Ottley. I really, really enjoyed the work he did on Invincible, and now he is on The Amazing Spider-Man. There are other artists and writers that I'm going to mention, but that will be in our next category. Because if you're listening to this, you're probably saying, why didn't you name this guy? Why didn't you name that guy? But our next category is our favorite comic book icons, so these guys will be there. But is there any honorable mentions you wanted to throw out there, Kevin, for writer and artists?
Yeah, just a few out there. I was late to it, because to go back to the Speedball New Warriors discussion, I didn't care for Thor when I was younger. But I'm now discovering how amazing Walt Simonson was.
Yep.
Jeez. It's just unreal. And especially, like, it's not the budget, but when I see those artist edition ones where they take the original art and republish it, God, it's just gorgeous. So pretty. I know you're saying Jim Lee, but, like, yes, there's stuff that's not great. Yes, there's stuff we can poke holes in, but I don't think you can ignore when influence Todd McFarlane was on comics. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, here's someone doing something new and groundbreaking. And if you find flaws in it, cool, great. Improve upon them and run with them. But this is something new, and this is the way we're going. So, you know, come along. Change it, adapt it, whatever you got to do. Come along.
And I just want to throw it out there, another local guy. He is also from Alberta, Canada.
Oh, that's true. I forgot. Grant Morrison, when he's on.
Yep.
There's a lot he does that I'm like, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what trans-dimensional plane you found yourself on when you were writing this. I don't know what's going on.
Well,
but when he's on, it's like, oh my gosh, it's so good.
Well, I'll just jump in there. Like, yes, when he's on, absolutely. But one thing I find with Morrison sometimes is, like, you're reading it and you're like, where is he going? And I've been guilty of this too, where I've dropped off, and then you realize, like, he's got like a you know, 10 or 20 issue overarching story in mind. And then when he pulls it off, it's like when you read it as a whole, it's like, whoa, I totally didn't see you were going that way. That was great. For example,
Seven Soldiers.
I personally haven't read that one, but I was going to say his New 52 Action Comics. Like, he did, I want to say, the first 20 issues of Action Comics in the New 52, and I had no idea where he was going. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And I did drop from time to time, and then I'd pick it back up, and then it was like, whoa, okay, now I see what you were doing. And now everything that didn't make sense is making sense now. But sorry, Kev, I cut you off. You were saying.
No, you're fine. He did Seven Soldiers, which the whole point is it's a team that never meets. But all of their individual adventures are tying into each other, and together they're defeating the bad guy. And it's long, and it's complicated, and it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. It's in, like, four graphic novels. I'm sure there's some, like, giant collection by now. I know Greg Capullo came on as, like, a Todd McFarlane fill-in, but, man, he became his own thing.
Yep. Excellent.
It's detailed, but he knows how to make it work, too.
I love, like, his New 52 Batman. Like, what he did with Scott Snyder. Amazing.
He knows when to use shade and when not to. He knows the angles. He knows, like, size differences. God, that kills me. So many artists don't do it. Because, mm-hmm. you know, so many artists would draw Batman and the Robins, which sounds like some band.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Batman and Dick and Jason and all. And they would all look the same. They would look like a bunch of dudes with black hair. Capullo draws, and you're like, oh my God. It's individuals. And it's so ridiculous that I'm shocked by that, but that's the way it happens. So many artists draw every character looks the same. They shouldn't. Spider-Man's build and Captain America's build should not be the same build.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do it. And Capullo was just knocking it out with, you know, remembering everyone's individuals. Steve Ditko, of course, George Perez. Which, you know, the more and more you see from Perez and realize what he did, you're like, how did you even find enough hours in the day?
Oh, I know. I just wanted to quickly jump on and say the Grant Morrison, his JLA run. Again, one of my favorite ones of comic books. So good.
Yep.
So good. But let's move into our favorite comic book icons, because you've already said a few that were on my list. So let's just talk about our favorite comic book icons. And yeah, George Perez was on there for me. One of my favorite artists of all time. So detailed. Like him and Busick's run on Avengers. Like, I love that so much. So much. And, of course, the Future Imperfect, the Incredible Hulk Future Imperfect miniseries that he did with Peter David. Probably the best Hulk story ever made. They need to make that as the next Hulk movie. I keep saying that. That needs to be the next Hulk movie. Perez's his attention to detail is so amazing, and the fact that he can keep pumping out issue after issue. And then there's guys that aren't even half as talented as him, and they can't, you know, do six issues in a row. It's amazing. Like, he's an amazing man. You also mentioned Roy Thomas, right?
No.
Okay.
Well, no, but I'd mentioned Marv Wolfman for something before, so that's he probably got on your mind already.
Okay. So yeah, I wanted to mention Roy Thomas. You know, he basically, from what I understand, he was a comic book fan who used to read comic books. He studied Stan Lee's method of writing and how he wrote comic books. And basically, he was just a fan who walked in the door and got a job and, you know, did some very memorable runs in comic books. And, you know, of course, you know, we got to mention Stan the Man Lee. Got to mention Jack King Kirby, you know, legends. Steve Ditko, another legend. I love his work on Spider-Man, John Romita, and a lot of people knock on John Romita Jr., but I like John Romita Jr.
Like what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I was gonna say like his modern stuff. He does. I don't know. To me, it seems like he's rushing. Like he doesn't put the detail in, yes, like he used to. But you know, I still like him. I still like him. But yeah, he could do better, I guess. The Kubert family. You know, every one of them. They're Andy, Adam, and what am I drawing a blank? Joe Kubert. You know, they're all great artists and icons in their own right. You know, I envy Adam and Andy. You know, with growing up with their dad, like basically, you know, when your dad is like a great comic book artist, you know, it's so awesome that he can teach you to be a comic book artist as well. Who else we got? Oh, Alan Moore. You know, I got to mention, Watchmen, you know, his run on Wildcats, his Swamp Thing run. Amazing. Jerry Conway. Who am I forgetting? Is there anyone you want to throw out there, Kev?
I absolutely can throw a few out there.
Yep.
Because I was going with ones that maybe you didn't do the best writing, maybe you didn't do the best art, but without the innovation that you laid down, mm-hmm, we wouldn't have what we have today.
Yep.
Siegel and Schuster, of course.
Yes.
It's going to seem a little, it might seem much, but Robert Crumb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you get Vertigo, Dark Horse, Image, what it is now, or honestly, any of independent comics without him. Neil Gaiman, of course.
Yes.
And still doing stuff, too. And, I mean, icon above icons in comics is Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I may have mentioned it before to you on your own, on the show, whatever. I don't understand why his death and now legacy has affected me more than people I actually know in real life. Never got to meet him or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But like, my kid's six, he likes superheroes, but, you know, the superheroes isn't, like, tier one for him. Pokemon is, you know, a couple other things, but he likes superheroes. We're watching a Spider-Man cartoon. Stan Lee is a character on the Spider-Man cartoon sometimes. He's a janitor. And when the janitor wants to make a point, he pulls out a box, his soapbox,
yeah,
and stands on it. And I'm losing it because it's Stan's soapbox from the Bolton bullpen.
Yep.
Open bulletins there. And Stan, you know, like I was watching an interview with Stan Lee and all, like, it's just like, you know, who's this guy? And he, you know, before anything more, my wife was like, that's not someone we make fun of in this house. Because she just knew, like, she just sensed it. And he hadn't done anything wrong. You know,
yep,
it could have been going there. He's a sarcastic little kid. But I was like, That's the guy that created everything we like, buddy.
Yep.
Without him, we wouldn't have any of the stuff that we like. And it was very sad when he left, and we all miss him, but the world's a lot better because we had him. And yep, then I hear it coming out of my mouth, I'm like, whoa. You know, how am I saying this about a man I never met? And how could I not say that stuff about people I have met?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, because it's Stan. That's why. And maybe not every story was perfect, and maybe not every idea was great. I don't care. You know, like, I wouldn't be where I am, nor you, nor most of the people we know in our, you know, internet blogging and writing community, nor the things we enjoy without him.
Yep.
Like, comics existed before him, comics exist after, but they would be nowhere near what they are without him.
Yep, absolutely. I'll throw a few other names out there right now. Mark Miller and Frank Miller. Or no, I should, sorry, Mark Millar and Frank Miller.
Millar, yeah.
Len Wein, you mentioned Marv Wolfman, but Len Wein as well. Let's see, I've got a list here. Jeff Johns.
It's so funny how some names just go together. It's almost like wrestling tag teams in a way. Like if you mention one, yeah, you gotta mention the other.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, Jeff Johns, yeah, Jeff Johns is amazing. One of my favorite artists is Ivan Reis. He does, you know, a lot of Justice League, a lot of Aquaman, that sort of thing. He's a DC guy. Darwin Cook, also, I really liked his work. And Dave Gibbons. You know, the artist behind Watchmen. I want to throw Chester Gould out there. He was the writer, writer and artist of the original Dick Tracy comic book strip. And then I mentioned them earlier, but from Mirage Studios, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman. You know, they created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm a huge Ninja Turtles fan. You know, so, you know, they are near and dear to my heart. But, yeah, I just wanted to also mention, getting back to talking about Stan Lee. When he passed away, that really did affect me a lot. Because, yeah, he, even though, I met him briefly at a convention. I got my picture taken with him. And it was such a thrill to be in his presence. And I was so happy, because it was a photo op situation. So you go in, you stand in line, and you go up and you take your picture with him. You get 30 seconds to you get to stand beside him, and then you move. You have to leave, right? So the next person can get their picture taken. I stood in line for probably 3 hours to get my picture taken with Stan, and I got to I just before I left. You know, I turned to Stan and I said, "Thanks for everything, Stan." And he didn't say anything, and he didn't reply to me or anything, because, you know, he'd been sitting there for, you know, two, three hours at that point. You know, and I mean, he's in his 90s. He's a pretty tired guy. But the fact that I got to say that to him made me happy, you know, because, you know, I do give Stan a lot of credit for, you know, for Marvel being what it is today. You know, Stan had a big hand in that. You know, I know there's a lot of, you know, naysayers. You know, there's people that, you know, think that Jack Kirby, you know, got the short end of the stick. And I know Steve Ditko had issues with him. And Stan was also, for many years, in the position of being the boss. You know, he was the editor-in-chief. He had to, you know, he had to answer to the publishers. You know, he had to make, you know, some tough decisions. He had to do some things. Was he perfect? No. But, you know, he was a pretty special guy. He was a remarkable human being. And I really believe, you know, like, we're enjoying the Marvel Cinematic Universe now. It wouldn't exist if it hadn't been for, you know, Stan for years pushing for Marvel stuff. Like, he was, you know, Marvel Comics' biggest fan. He was the biggest cheerleader. You know, he moved out to Hollywood to work on getting Marvel on television, to get Marvel, in the theaters. You know, he's the reason why there was the Incredible Hulk TV series in the 70s. He's the reason why there was the 60s Spider-Man cartoons. And honestly, he's the reason why we have the Marvel Cinematic Universe today. Because he was, you know, championing those characters for years. And fortunately, you know, time and technology and Hollywood finally caught up with Stan, and they were able to make these movies. They were able to actually do a Spider-Man movie that looked real. They were actually able to do an X-Men movie that was realistic. You know, it didn't look campy, it didn't look silly. You know, it wasn't the, you know, like the Fantastic Four movie they made in the 90s, or the, you know, Captain America movies that they did that were really bad in the day. You know, and you know,
I mean, I own them, but they're bad.
yeah, they are. But I mean, we have what we have today in large part because of Stan Lee, because he really fought and worked hard to get Marvel where it is. So anyway, that's a nice way for us to end our comic book discussion, for our main topic anyway. So let's move on to our next segment, which we call Brain Candy. Now for Brain Candy, we pick one thing that we have been watching or reading lately. So I want to say like a week and a half ago, I finally sat down and watched the DC Universe animated film Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I meant to get that from library before everything shut down.
Yeah, the only reason I've been waiting for it to show up on one of my streaming services, because I used to buy all the DC animated movies as they came out, and then they keep making these movies. Like, there's so many of them now, like, I couldn't keep up anymore. So I just decided, well, I if they're really good, you know, I'll buy it on Apple Play or something, or I'll just wait.
They do usually show up for Black Friday.
Yes. But, you know, like, I've been trying to get away from buying physical stuff, though, like, just because, you know, I got so many movies, I got so, you know, like, I'm trying to go digital at this point. But it was on sale at Walmart for, I think, like $10. So I was like, you know what? I got to pull the trigger on this. It's only $10. and I did read the comic book series on which this is based. Like, they actually did a crossover a few years ago. I want to say it was written by, James Tynion IV, I believe, from DC Comics, who, as it turns out, is also a Ninja Turtles fan. And I really liked the miniseries, so I bought this movie and sat down and finally watched it. It came out a year ago, over a year ago now. It was a lot of fun. You know, I love DC, the DC animated universe. I love what they do. And this, yeah, it was a fun movie to watch. And I'm hoping they adapt, because they have since done a second miniseries of Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that one was really good. The ending kind of sucked a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I really enjoyed, like, I'm talking about the second miniseries. The ending ended on a whimper. But everything leading up to it was pretty awesome. So maybe they'll change that if they do that into another movie. But yeah, for this film, I highly recommend it. It was a lot of fun. But Kev, what do you have for Brain Candy?
It has been an exhausting, since we last recorded it, it has been an exhausting marathon of wrestling things lately.
Mm. Excellent.
WrestleMania took place over two nights. And of course, I watched both nights, and they were about 3 hours long, and then 3 hours 15 minutes, 3 hours 20 for night two.
Wow.
So it was a lot, but it was better than having 6 hours in one night, which they did the last couple years. That's an exhausting night.
Yes.
Plus pre-shows each night, too. and then I have my other podcasts over on the Retro Network, The House Show, and we're going through the old In Your House pay-per-views from WWF. So I've watched three of those in the last week to prepare for podcasts. And then, because that wasn't enough, I have watched every episode so far of the Vice Channel's documentary series, The Dark Side of the Ring. This is tough. If one, it's absolutely an adult series. Kids listening, you can't watch it.
I've been meaning to get to it. I keep seeing it advertised. It looks awesome. I've been meaning to watch it.
It's now season one shorter. Honestly, like most shows, let's see how it goes. Let's see how many people watch. Season two is longer, and it's still ongoing. There's actually an episode tonight as we record.
Okay.
Season one has a Macho Man and Elizabeth episode. Let me think. Bruiser Brody episode. That was rough. Fabulous Moolah. The Montreal Screwjob, which is Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Mm-hmm. Episode on the entire Von Erich family. And then ones I didn't even know. I had never heard of Gino Hernandez. I'm watching it. It's Ric Flair, pretty much. But never made it to Ric Flair's level because he died under mysterious circumstances. Still, after watching this, I'm not sure what happened. Then the new season has a two-parter episode, two episodes on Chris Benoit and that whole thing. Mm-hmm. They just aired one on New Jack, and then the one tonight is Brawl for All, which was a terrible idea WWF had with consequences that lasted for years. But there's murder, there's drugs, there's sex, there's injuries, there's deaths for many reasons, there's cover-ups, there's flat-out lies, and each is an hour-long minus commercial, so about 45, 50 minutes. If you don't know anything, they're horribly eye-opening, honestly. You're just like, I can't believe all this happened. I can't believe all this was going on. I can't believe I had no idea about any of this. For the stories that I knew stuff, there are things left out. But they get the grand story completely. But there's things I'm like, yeah, but this there's stuff where I'm like, okay, but during this conversation, I know this person was also in the room because they've done an interview in the years and given their own perspective. No, it's not necessary for the hour-long story, but it's an interesting side part, So to give a comics example, it's like, all right, we have our main story, we have our main miniseries, our Secret Wars, our Crisis, or whatever, but me as a longtime fan, I know that there's other stories that have the little logo in the corner on the cover that says a Secret Wars tie-in, I know these stories exist too that could add to the greater story, but it's not needed for the main story, the main narrative. But they are, engrossing. I was up all night. I was watching two a night because I was getting so into it. It's tough to watch. Some of the people go back because I've already gone back and, watch other matches for other research and shows and articles and all. I waited a week to watch the Benoit one. I'm like, I need to be in the right mental place to watch this because I know it's going to be rough. And I know it's going to be bad to watch. I highly recommend it for anyone interested in it. Do not watch it around kids. If you have a spouse or partner that's very sensitive to stuff like that, there's a few episodes you just need to watch by yourself. I think the only one that I was willing to change my perspective a little bit was the Macho Man and Elizabeth episode. They paint him in a better light than I had over the last decade, let's say. But again, I don't know. It's like any documentary, it's who controls the narrative. So you could have a counterpiece to this that would say, oh, I didn't know those details. I've changed my mind again. But it's very, very interesting. It's well worth, if you got any interest in wrestling, it is well worth watching. But yeah, be in the right frame of mind for it. Maybe watch a cartoon after.
All right. Let's move on to our Enders segment. And Okay, so let's just jump right into it, Kevin. You'd mentioned that WrestleMania was this weekend. How was it? You know, in with the whole COVID-19 thing going on, like, I didn't watch it, but from what I understand, they were, you know, like, wrestling in an empty arena or whatever. How was it? Was it worth watching?
It's for the matches, for the match part of the show, and I'll explain what I mean by match part of the show coming up here. You could tell there was a learning curve as they were doing the show. Now, we've had empty arena for a couple weeks now. And the first time they recorded it, they set it up the way they always set it up. Here's the ramp. To the right of the ramp in the crowd is where you put your, what they call the hard camera. That's your main camera for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have cameramen walking around with, you know, the portable ones. But your main camera for the show is to the right of the entrance. So they do a Raw, they do SmackDown, and all they're showing is empty seats. So what they did the next week is that hard camera was now moved opposite the entrance. So you're seeing the ring and the entrance ramp, and you're not seeing the seats at all. So it made it look like it wasn't an empty building. So there's a learning curve for it. The WrestleMania showed the biggest learning curve because first two matches of the first night, everyone's going out there just wrestling a normal match. But it's not normal. There's no... Not only is there not a crowd to react and cheer for big moves, boo, give ooh, ahs, you know, whatever it might be, there's not a crowd to absorb the sound either. So it just sounds like, it sounds like when you're cleaning your bathroom, mm-hmm, and you take everything out of there, and then the sound echoes weird in the room, and you realize how much the sound is absorbed and bounces by just having, like, your towels and everything else in the room.
Yep.
So it sounds weird. And finally, it was Becky Lynch, the man, as she's called, has been the women's champ for 365 days. She goes out there for her match, and the girl she's wrestling used to be a mixed martial artist. So she's a legit fighter. And they beat the hell out of each other. So every hit is not wrestling hit, you know, let's get close or let's... They are beating the hell out of each other, and the sound is coming off, and you're like, oh, I'm seeing a fight. But it worked.
Yeah.
Then it got us into it. So you definitely saw progression after that match of, oh, this is how we work without a crowd. This is how we make it go interesting. And the night started improving. And then the second night, it seemed like most people got the memo and learned how to work in this style.
Yeah.
What happened, though, is both nights had what we're calling the cinematic matches. Recorded like a movie. Heavily edited. Lots of work. Lots of camera angles. They both did it like a movie. Filmed outside of the arena. Filmed at other locations. And they are flat-out WWE movies. First one, Undertaker against AJ Styles. They fight in a graveyard. And it's a canon 1980s VHS horror movie.
Hmm.
It really is. There's graves, there's blood, there's people coming in out of nowhere. There's a spooky house. There's incredible lighting. There's music. It's a movie. And it's a well-done one. So that's on the end of night one, and everyone's just like, I don't know what I just saw, but I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah.
Night two, they did the Firefly Funhouse match. Bray Wyatt's character is pretty much like an evil Mr. Rogers. And he has like a Jekyll and Hyde thing going. He faces John Cena. John Cena comes out for the match in the arena, says, let's do WrestleMania, and all of a sudden we get like weird camera effects. He shows up in Bray Wyatt's home, the Mr. Rogers set, the funhouse. And Bray takes him through his career. So they did a story. They pretty much, and I'm saying this half jokingly, they pretty much did Watchmen on John Cena. Let's deconstruct your entire career. Here's where you failed. Here's where you should have done something differently. Here's where you did this. Here's where you did that. And it's Bray taking him through. And what they did was they compared John Cena to Hulk Hogan. So they put John Cena on Saturday Night's Main Event, which was the old NBC show.
Mm-hmm.
Cena was a kid when that aired. He was, you know, he was like in school. They put him in the NWO. He wasn't a wrestler yet. He was probably in like high school at the time.
Yeah.
But they made him Hogan. Like, hey, you're the giant blonde superhero that can do no wrong. You're Hogan. And all you've done is hurt other people because now they can't be stars. You hurt other people like me, the guy facing him. So they do this elaborate, like, alternate world reality thing. And I had to watch it twice to figure out what's going on. There's tons of inside reference. It's like Watchmen. You know, you go through and you read it once. You're like, that's a good story. You read it again. Go, oh my God, I didn't pick up this and this and this other thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have the IDW or whatever collection that gives you all the notes to the side. It's like, this references, you know, this 1970 comic. And you're like, all right, never would have known that. But they break it all down. Now, the crazy thing, because my friend Will messages me and says, so is John Cena, you know, dead? Like, is this, are they writing off the character forever? So I look, everyone this guy Bray Wyatt has faced in the last 2 years since this character,
mm-hmm.
when he defeats them, they revert back to a previous gimmick. It's like he's retconning them.
Hmm.
I'm like, this is just supposed to be wrestling. Like, my brain shouldn't have to work for wrestling.
Yep.
And I say that lovingly. But, like, I shouldn't have to think to enjoy wrestling. And I've wasted, like, so much time in the last couple of days trying to figure this out. But it's there's a before and after now. And I truly think this is now after. I think every year is going to have one of these movie matches, for sure. I think other companies are going to take this idea and run with it. And I think that, and certainly as long as we got coronavirus going on, this is what wrestling's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, we don't have athletic matches. We have athletic movies. And I think this is the before and after moment. This is, you know, Steve Austin showing up. This is, you know, Hogan showing up. This is like Cable showing up. You know, this is, there was wrestling before this moment, wrestling after.
Yeah.
And I think we're, for next 20 years, we're going to see movie wrestling. It's worth seeking out. It's a trip.
Hmm.
But it was a good night. You know, I mean, wrestling demands a crowd, but I give them, they should have shut down earlier and taped everything sooner than they did.
Yeah.
But that said, I give them credit for, okay, we can either shut down or we can adapt. Let's try adapting.
Hmm, excellent.
If only comics were adapting this quickly right now.
Yes. Unfortunately, yeah, like, comic book, like, to switch gears here. Comic book industry, yeah, it's not looking good. I know a lot of comic book shops.
Diamond reached a deal today.
Oh, okay.
Diamond's gonna pay what they can for now, and then make up payments later, which is better than paying nothing to all the companies.
Mm-hmm. Which is what they were going to do, like.
Yeah.
But that, unfortunately, that's what happens when you put all your eggs in one basket. Like, you know, like they shouldn't have had the monopoly.
True, but so again, my friend Will Knight, it's public knowledge. Will at one point worked for a diamond distributor, so he knows a lot of things.
Yep.
But one of the things he pointed out to me when we were going back and forth on this is no one else wants it. there's no startup company that wants to take this distribution model and have to make deals with every publisher and every comic store and get into it. No one's doing this as a startup. So Diamond's kind of stuck with it too. Yes, they put themselves, I'm not saying poor Diamond, they created this, but no one wants to take it off their hands either. Like, no one's showing up for this. I think Marvel, DC, I think your big ones are going to ride it out, and it's going to suck, and people will get fired, and your publishing line will drop for a while, but I think these companies will survive.
Oh, yeah.
But your real small ones are going to probably have to fold up. Or what's killing me, and I got a review coming on my own site, hopefully soon. It was a big book, and it was a lot to read. But it's a book called Comics and Stuff, and it's talking about not only comics as items to collect that people think are garbage, which is true. If you're not a comic fan, you think it's garbage and you don't understand our world. But also how comics interpret that as well. So it's taking examples of various comic books and like, okay, here's a drawing of a couple arguing and they're showing all of his stuff and all her stuff. And what can we tell about the characters based on this? So I think that part of the problem is how we view what comics are and what they aren't. And the point in the book was, if you take your Diamond comics, here are the top 10 comics going to comic book stores. But then you take your Random House, Penguin Publishing, Barnes Noble, Chapters, whatever, list of here are the top 10 comics coming to our stores. There's only one comic on both those lists. And it was Walking Dead. But your comic book lists are Walking Dead and then Superman, Batman, X-Men, Spider-Man, you know, what you would expect. Your bookstore list, which comes from someone other than Diamond, is all of your, like, manga, your romance, your, like, the Babysitter's Club graphic novels, your in-depth personal ones like Blankets, a Bone. Bone's a huge one on there. And they come from a different publisher. So you can have someone else other than Diamond publish these books and get them into bookstores and probably comic stores too. But my guy at my local comic shop is not in a position to call up Random House and set up a deal with them. You know, they're just not.
No.
So I see, like, I wish there was a better distribution method. I wish there was a better answer. I understand not doing digital as well, but I think it's going to hurt doubly so by not doing it. You know, like, what do we get? Do we get some issues that we're getting 2 or 3 copies a month to catch up? Okay. So now I need to, let's say I spent $100 a month at the comic store. So what, in July, I spent $300 because I'm getting 3 months worth? Because you published 3 months worth to catch up? That's not going to help anyone either.
No.
I'm not going to take my usual $100 and spend $300 because you got 3 times the amount. I'm going to still spend my $100, and now you're stuck with 3 times the amount in the store.
They're just going to drive customers away.
Yeah, so I see comic stores folding. I see your smaller publishers, if they're smart, they just pulled everything and said, I'm not going to publish anything right now. And I mean, like, you know, pick your previews back catalog. Most of those people, the comic's not a full-time job for them. They have other stuff. And granted, all that other stuff could be closed right now, too. But in theory, they can be like, okay, I'm not going to publish, you know, Awesome Man number 87 this month. I'll wait until everything's back and then publish it. But at least I'm not sitting on, you know, a couple hundred copies of it there now in my garage because I can't ship them out. And if I did ship them out, wouldn't matter because Diamond's not going to pay me. But, I mean, what comics are a year from now is not what they were last month. It's just not going to be.
Yeah, it's... Well, it's the whole world. I mean, there's...
Oh, yeah.
You know, everyone's getting affected. Comic books are no different. But I have heard one way, you know, like this, and this comes from a comic book store owner. One way you can help comic book stores, you know, make ends meet and you know, pay their bills and whatnot, is if you're looking for, you know, a graphic novel, like a lot of these comic book stores, they'll still send stuff to you. Like if you want to order from them, like they're still going to, you know, like the comic book store owners and some of their employees are still going to the comic book store to send graphic novels or comic books or what, you know, to send out orders to customers. So if you want to, you know, support a local comic book store, like maybe just order your books online that they are available. Like, yeah, as of right now, there are no new comic books available, but I mean, if there's some graphic novels you've been thinking about picking up, you know, maybe, you know, instead of ordering them from Amazon, order them directly from a comic book store. You know, like you might spend a little bit more, but at the end of the day, you're helping these, you know, these comic book stores stay afloat, you know. And I mean, they're already a dying breed. You know, comic book stores are closing all over the place to begin with before all this happened. So if you want to help them stay afloat, and I mean, most comic book stores, aside from selling graphic novels and comic books, I mean, they sell a lot of other stuff too. You know, a lot of toys, collectibles, that sort of thing. Manga, anime, films, you know, you name it, you know that your comic book store might have it.
I want to throw in, search if your local comic shop has anything, any social media at all, Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, because a lot of them are also posting, hey, here's what we have in the shop, here's how much it costs, please email us or call, and we'll set it aside for you, and, you know, we can do a pickup or delivery or something.
Yeah.
But they're going through, like, their store and just taking pictures of what they have. Because, no, I mean, like, yeah, you can just type, you know, you can go to Amazon, type in, you know, whatever you want, and it'll bring it up right away. But a comic store's not set up like that. They just aren't. But I've seen beautiful pictures of ones across the world. They're like, hey, this is in shop, this is in shop, that's in shop, who wants it, here's the price. You know, if you pick it up, it's this much. If you don't pick it up, it, you know, we might have a little shipping charge, whatever. But it's been, it's at least worth a follow, if not get them business.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, even if you can't spend the money, you can say, that's a shop I want to spend my money at when I can, or when they're open again, or when I have money, whatever it might be.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people that are in the same position as comic book store owners and employees. You know, like, they can't order stuff right now. But if you can, you know, definitely try and order from them directly. And, yeah, like, some of them do the pickup where, you know, you can go to the store and they'll meet you out front or bring it to your car or whatever. But they also do... you know, a lot of them do, you know, through the mail, or through UPS or whatever. You know, if you can, like, that's the best way you can help a comic book store. All right, so moving on, I just found out today, and I had heard this was coming for a while, but it's official that the Nerd Lunch podcast is coming to an end.
I was listening to the penultimate one earlier today. I haven't finished it yet, but yeah, I was listening to.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't listened to it. To be honest, I haven't listened to Nerd Lunch in a while. Not that it's not a good podcast. It is a great podcast. It's just I don't have as much time to listen to podcasts, unfortunately. But when I do listen to Nerd Lunch episodes. Like, typically when I go to the walking track, I listen to a lot of podcasts. But for the last month, I haven't been able to go to the walking track. I used to have a longer commute to work, so I used to listen to a lot of podcasts on my commute. Fortunately for me, I don't have a long commute anymore, but unfortunately it's taken away from my podcast listening time. But Nerd Lunch is it's a good podcast, good group of guys. You know, I've podcasted with each one of them over the years. CT, Geej, and PAX, you know, at one point or another. They've been on one of the podcasts I was on, whether it was Geek Fallout or it was the comic book episodes or it was Trek 1701, or it was Random Nerdness when I was doing the Random Nerdness podcast. And a lot of the fourth chair guests have also podcasted with over the years, a great number of them. It was through Nerd Lunch that I met Miss M, who has come on this podcast a few times. And also, it was Nerd Lunch where I made my podcasting debut. I was on, I want to say episode, it was either episode 26 or 28. I can't remember. It was one of those. And I actually, I don't have it. Oh, maybe I do. I was doing some spring cleaning today, going through some old drawers in my bedroom, and I came across an email sent to me from Mr. Carlin Trammell, also known as CT from the Nerd Lunch podcast. He sent me the show notes for the episode that I was on back in 2012. And unfortunately, I was only ever on one episode of Nerd Lunch. But, you know, it gave me the bug. You know, I was on an episode of the Nerd Lunch podcast. I really enjoyed it. Had a great time with the guys. And then, so that was March 2012 that I was on Nerd Lunch. And then it was fall 2012 when I started podcasting myself, when I was on Random Nerdness and Geek Fallout. And like I said, over the years, like CT's been on a number of episodes. PAX, I know, used to come on the comic book episodes quite a bit because he's, you know, a big comic book guy. Geej has done a number of Geek Fallout episodes with us. But yeah, I found this old, these notes that CT sent me, and the episode was Star Trek What If. So some of the stuff that we went over was actually quite extensive. Like, I'm actually wanting to do this as an episode of the Pop Culture Pub because this was a lot of fun. It's too bad that Nerd Lunch is ending. Did they say why they're ending, Kevin? Like, they're just busy, or?
I mean, I wouldn't say there's been an official on-air thing. Mm-hmm. Just that it's time. My guess has got to be, and I mean, there's, you know, to pull the curtains back a little bit for listeners, a lot of people in our whole geek blogging podcast community do talk to each other, you know, text, mm-hmm. private messages, you know, chats, whatever. So there's always stuff, you know, going back and forth where it's like, oh, hey, so-and-so's, you know, depressed right now, so-and-so's upset right now, whatever. The only thing I ever heard for Nerd Lunch was just like, they started it so long ago and their lives are not the same anymore. And they've mm-hmm. done well over 300 episodes, plus yep. been on other people's shows, plus editing, plus, you know, all this stuff. And just their show notes and their detail and everything, it's a job. Podcast is a job. They do a lot. And I think just the way that, you know, their lives grew, you know, families were, you know, the quote day jobs, stuff like that, it just wasn't what it wasn't, you know, it wasn't what it was when they started it anymore. Commitment, exhaustion, and honestly, 300 plus episodes in, they got to probably be like, what else do we have to say? You know, and I can see it and understand, but it also, it feels like the end of an era. Because with them going their way now, Underscoop Fire went away a while ago, the Cold Slither went away a while ago, and in our, when the league happened, we all started discovering each other, mm-hmm. and then the Ripples Out, those were the three big podcasts, And when Underscoop Fire Nerd Lunch started hanging out and crossing over, everyone started crossing over. It was like we needed those two to meet to start for everyone else to meet, in a way. And they brought so many other people with it. And I mean, you know, that's you and me talking, that's Miss M.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, other work that we do. And, you know, we got this loose group, but not everyone knows each other, not everyone hangs out, not everyone that. But it seemed like Nerd Lunch was the last thing connecting us all. And in a way, it was like, but we all still listen to Nerd Lunch.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we're not all Facebook, Twitter, you know, whatever, followers and friends with all the same people. But Nerd Lunch is like, was, you know, it was the Kevin Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
It was that thing that still, you know, we were all connected through Nerd Lunch in some way.
Yeah.
And now that's gone, it's like, okay, now what? I think the closest, and I'm not saying it because I'm on there, but I think closest right now is Retro Network, with all that they do, is bringing in a lot of crossover of people. There's a lot of people that have been on there that go all the way back to the league and have their things and have been guests on podcasts or writing articles or whatever. Or even if they're not officially on there, there's at least shout outs, mentions, you know, go to this person's blog, this person's podcast. But they're also still new too. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the, you know, the history behind it that the other ones did. And I mean, I listen to a lot of them, or a lot in our group, you know, or that were in our group. But no one else is, like, you know, I write and got my site and podcast and all, but I can't corral everyone and keep track of everyone. I'd love to.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of hope that eventually someone does and just kind of has, like, a database of all of us in this ragtag group of, like, here's everyone's blog, here's everyone's, you know, social media information, here's everyone's podcast and all, and, like, a hub of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish someone had the time to. It's not me. But I do want it. It's sad with Nerd Lunch going away. I'm like, okay, well, now who's in charge, you know?
Yeah.
It's like we're waiting to find out who the teacher is next semester.
Yeah, it's but, definitely an end of an era. It really is. It sucks. Like I said, I don't listen all the time. You know, like, I for years I listened every week. Like, I Nerd Lunch was one of my go-to podcasts. But unfortunately, as time goes on, you know, I kind of drifted away a little bit. But I still really appreciate everything those guys have done for all of us. Like I said, like, I did my podcasting debut on Nerd Lunch. I've been friends with CT before he ever had a podcast. Back when the Atomic Geeks had just started their podcast and they had the Atomic Geeks Forum. That's where I met CT. Oh, geez,
another one gone, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's where I met CT. Like, he was a fellow Star Trek fan, and we, you know, exchanged ideas back and forth, you know, over the years. And like I said, you know, every time, you know, they would come on one of our podcasts, you know, it was like talking to an old friend. Like, you know, like, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, blah, blah, blah. And you just jump right into it. It was, you know, they're an excellent group of guys. They really are. It's too bad, you know, like, but I completely understand, though, you know, having been there myself, you know, 2018, like, I, at the beginning of 2018, I gave up podcasting for the better part of a year. I just got to a point, like, there was so much going on in my personal life and so on and so forth. I had to give something up, and I gave up my podcasting, and I kind of regret it, you know, even to this day, because I know I lost a lot of listeners that used to listen to my podcasts over, like, when I was doing Geek Fallout. I used to have a lot more listeners that I don't have now, unfortunately, with the Pop Culture Pub. I mean, I love the Pop Culture Pub. I love podcasting with you, Kevin. I love podcasting with Jason. I love all the guests that we're getting on, like Miss M, you know, when Jeff came back, Richard, Richard Sabo that was on last episode, you know, one of my buddies from Vulcan. Like, I love getting people and podcasting and having a great time. But unfortunately, when I gave it up initially, you know, a lot of people checked out. And I don't blame them either, because, you know, like I said, you know, a lot of, I don't think people are listening to as many podcasts anymore, because people are just, there's so much competition. Like nowadays, like especially like on a commute, for example, you know, like you're on a commute, you're on a bus going to work or a train or whatever. You can watch movies and TV shows now on that commute. Like, but back in, you know, 10 years ago, even up to like 5 years ago, that wasn't as common as it is now. Like, it was more audio. Now, you know,
yeah,
the sky's the limit. Like, there's so much competition now. Like, I really think that's why. Well, and not just that, but there's so many famous people getting into podcasting now that people want to listen to them. And I completely get that too. You know, there's a lot of competition in some ways, but we're also seeing some of the, you know, these original podcasters, these grassroots guys, you know, that, you know, built something from nothing, you know, giving it up. But at the same time, I completely understand, you know, at some point you do have to give it up.
It sounds like Michael May might continue the Fourth Chair Army episodes.
That's cool.
So I don't know if that would be on the same feed or just a monthly or what, but apparently that's been discussed. Last year I was talking to my wife. I'm like, I really want to try to go to RetroCon this year. It's in Pennsylvania. A lot of the bloggers and podcasters go there. Mm-hmm. I was like, it would be great to actually meet some of these people that I've been talking to or corresponding with for years now.
Yep.
Well, now say the world, it's probably not happening. You know, look into it 2021. We'll see if everything's better.
Yeah.
And I was looking forward to it. But if anything, because I was thinking about it, I'm recording with you tonight. I'm mm-hmm. recording another one tomorrow. I did a bunch of recording last week and all. And I was like, also, though, with the state of the world, I could see podcasting coming back. Like you're saying, but it's not what it used to be. I can see it coming back because this is becoming the only way to have good conversations and good mm-hmm. information. Like, you know, I'll talk to my mom or dad, check in. I talk to my wife, of course, all the time. But my work's been closed for almost, you know, for 3 weeks now. Probably going to be three more at least. We'll see, if not longer.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I didn't have a comic person at work. I didn't have a wrestling person at work. My previous job, I had like one or two, but that was only if we worked the same shift. We didn't, then, you know, my mouth's closed for the day. But I can have these great conversations recording podcasts. I can listen to great conversations, and it makes my day. You know, like you were saying, mm-hmm. with the whole theme of it being Pop Culture Pub, it's going into a geek bar and going, hey, can I have a drink? Oh, cool, sure. What's that about? Oh, let's have a conversation. Turns out we're into the same thing. And next thing you know, you've been talking to this complete stranger for 2 hours, and it's one of the best conversations you've had all year.
Yep. That is true. Yep.
And, yeah. And podcasting has become this outreach, certainly for me, and I'm sure for other people, of this is the way to have those conversations still.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, even before, if it's just you don't work with someone or you don't have a close friend nearby that you can just sit and hang out with, well, now you actually can't sit and hang out with that person. You might get fined or arrested for it. So mm-hmm. let's do this.
Yep. No, that is true. And if there's going to be a positive coming out of this, out of the COVID thing, like maybe it could be a resurgence for podcasting. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Because I love podcasting. Like you said, I love talking and sharing my thoughts and ideas and so on. you know, like, yeah, like when I gave it up for that year, like I really missed it. And you never know, like with the Nerd Lunch Boys, you might see them come back. You know, maybe they might, you know, maybe they might say, hey, you know,
I'm going to say at least one of them within a year says, you know, I miss it. I'm going to start my own thing.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, the Atomic Geeks did that too. Like they gave it up and then they came back and they do another couple different podcasts, but, it's a lot of fun. It really is. And, but anyway, getting back to Nerd Lunch, I just wanted to say, you know, I just wanted to thank them for all that they've done, you know, in regards to the podcasting community and the blogging community, like you said, bringing everyone together. You know, a very professional podcast. Like I got to tell you, out of all the podcasts that I've been a guest on, Nerd Lunch by far has been the most professional. Like I said, I came across my show notes that CT sent me back in 2012. It's a 12-page email. Like, there's a lot of detail in this email, 12 pages worth. Like, it's amazing. Like, and I mean, you know what I'm like, Kevin. Like, I just do things spur of the moment. Like, I'll send out a message a week before, you know, or a couple of weeks before. Like, this is what my ideas for episodes coming up. You know, what are your guys' thoughts? And I'll corral you and whoever else I can get to come on and be on these episodes with me. But a lot of it, some episodes I don't even take notes myself. Like I'm just winging it, because that's just my style. But like I said, with the Nerd Lunch crew, it's way more professional. Like I said, a 12-page email, like it was crazy. And I remember when I got on that podcast, I actually did like a pre-interview with them. Actually, it was just with CT. Like he basically called me up on Skype, and we did like a pre-show interview, like where, you know, basically he wanted to like hear how I sounded, because I mean, podcasting is an audio format, so you know, if I don't sound like I don't know, like I guess if I sounded really bad or something, like he might not want me on the podcast. Or, you know, if my microphone was really bad, he might say, hey, is there any way you can get a different mic or something? You know, it was a test call, and it was 2 months before I actually recorded the episode. So like, that's how far, like they're like, he was literally planning months in advance. That's how detailed he was. And I imagine still is, from everything I've seen, like all the, like his social media, you know, his blog, everything CT does, like it's so detailed, so meticulous, very inspiring, like such a professionalism. It's so incredible. But anyway, I just wanted to, again, say thank you to Nerd Lunch. Appreciate everything you've done for all of us. And you will be missed, without a shadow of a doubt. Like, in my mind.
A kapla?
Yeah, definitely kapla. Definitely. They are definitely podfathers in a lot of ways for a lot
podfathers.
Of us.
Podfathers.
I've used that description when I used to talk about the Atomic Geeks. I used to call them the Podfathers, but by extension that has now went to also the Nerd Lunch Boys and Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith to me is the Podfather, but Nerd Lunch definitely they're up there as well. All right. So let's play that game, which I borrowed from the Nerd Lunch podcast many years ago, because they do this. I'm assuming they still do this. Where
they do.
Can we find? Okay. Because yeah,
I'm the thing.
Yeah, I lifted this from them years ago, and actually we did have for a little while there, we did have a friendly little rivalry going on. between Geek Fallout and Nerd Lunch, when, like, we would do a topic, and then, like, a month or two later, they would do a very similar topic to what we did. And then we're like, okay. So then we would take one of their topics and do a very similar topic. And it was a friendly back and forth for a while there. A lot of fun. And like I said, those boys came on and we always had a great time. But anyway, I borrowed this from them many moons ago. And that is, where can we find you on the internet? Kevin, if I wanted to find you on the internet, how would I find you?
You can find the blog is maskedlibrary.com. Masked Library is also a Facebook page you can like, the at Twitter, the at Instagram. And my new podcast is over at theretronetwork.com. It is called The House Show, in which we review and rewatch and comment on decades-old classic wrestling pay-per-views.
Excellent. You can follow me at my blog. It is randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. Be sure to check out the Pop Culture Pub podcast group on Facebook. Send a request to join, and I'm sure I'll approve it. We focus on positive pop culture news and discussion there. At last count, our group membership was at 201 members. I'm also the admin at The Incredible Fans of The Incredible Hulk. It is a group on Facebook. And at last count, that group was at 1,046 members. All right, so on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and my co-host, Mr. Kevin Decent, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Hey Kids, It's Comics episode, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future. And again, in honor of Nerd Lunch, I say kapla.
Mm-hmm.